Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Saturday Morning Tech Show. My name is Todd Cochran, and I have joined with me two esteemed content creators. We've got Andy McCaskey from SDR News up on top today. Andy, good morning. How are you? How you doing?
Good morning, and I understand that this mic's working better than the mic that's built into the computer, huh?
Yeah, we're not hearing, I guess for better words, we're not hearing the 25,000 decibels of your AC, your computers, and everything else, so it's good.
And okay, I'll admit, note to self, don't do that anymore.
And on the bottom, we've got Rob Greenlee. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing terrific. It's great to be here again.
Well, I'm alive and well. I tell you guys, I have had the past, I would say the past 10 days have been the most interesting past 10 days that I've had in some years, in the fact that I've had like three major deals in work. I've had some extraordinary meetings. I mean, literally going from getting up at like the break of dawn and not leaving this office except for food, bathroom, and everything else until some nights midnight. And last night was the first I walked out of this office. I had dinner and I just looked at the office and I said, I'm going to bed.
Yeah. Too much, huh?
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy here in a good way, so I can't complain. But it's been just really busy and lots of enlightening things and enlightening discussions. And if anyone tells you that the the new media space is dead, let me be here to tell you firsthand, it is no way dead. It is alive and kicking. And while I cannot go into details, I'm sorry. All I can say is I have been witness to some of the most profound conversations I think I've heard in many years over the last couple of weeks. It's been pretty good. So with that being said, you guys are wondering what in the heck is going on. That's all I can say.
But I'm wondering what's going on here, Todd, because we just lost your video here.
Did we? Yeah. You guys lose? Yeah. Maybe it shut. Did someone do something?
I still got you on your stream. Things are cool on the stream.
Is the stream still up? Well, that's odd. If you guys say the stream is still live, then are you sure the stream is still live?
That's what I'm checking right now. Yeah. It appears that the stream's up, but your Skype video is down.
Okay. So, all right. Those of you on the stream good? It should be good. All right. Well, we'll keep. And I lost video. I see we did lose video on the, because we're not streaming to. We're off on Ustream too.
If I want to see your reaction, Todd, I just look over and say, wait about 4 seconds, and I can see exactly what was on your mind.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right. Well, if the stream goes bad, those of you on the stream, let me know. You know, this is interesting. What happens here is I have all of these switches in this office on environmental switches, and basically I can remote control and turn off every switch in the studio. And what has happened as of late is that my wife puts more of those in another part of the house, and if she hits the wrong button, it turns power off on some of my devices. Uh-oh. So I'm just going to reach over here and hit the on switch on all these. I don't think it's the issue because I see the converters underneath are still on. So it must be we lost the video out of the TriCaster. Well, anyway, you guys, I can see you. That's the main thing. Well, you know, this is why we have to have sponsors, because without sponsors, I wouldn't be able to afford to fix gear that broke midstream. And this is quite irritating. But anyway, hey, folks, definitely this month is the month that you are going to save a lot of money. This is the best deal that I have seen in really forever. And what I want you to do is definitely, if you've been thinking about a domain name, I've got them for $4.95 each. And all you got to do is go over to GoDaddy.com and use the promo code 495GEEK, and you'll get up to 3 domains at that price. And normally $7.99, so about a $3 savings per domain, which is awesome. But I guarantee you'll not find a $4.95 domain anywhere else. But again, you can get 3. And then if you want to save money, you can use my ComSale code on additional domains. And of course, you can check stuff out at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. And that's where all my codes are. There's a code there, as I say, for every occasion. And remind you, if you're using trying to combine one of my codes with a GoDaddy deal, they will not work. Clear your shopping cart and come back and do it again. Definitely use my promo codes. It helps the show here a lot and helps me keep the lights on and keep fixing stupid gripes like just happened here a few minutes ago. So, guys, what's new? I know, Rob, you said it's big change. You guys are busy at Microsoft, and things are, you know, ramping up for an interesting fall with the release of Windows 8, Windows Phone, and all that. So are you guys like in pre-launch mode at this point?
Yeah, I mean, there's just, you know, it's the end of the year, kind of new year transition, and there's a lot of new things going on, and we're pushing forward to a pretty exciting fall with Windows 8, and things are getting, the bar is getting ramped up. I'll just put it to you that way.
Well, that's good. So, Andy, what's new in SDR Newsland, or what's going on there?
Oh, I should have gone over and grabbed it and carried my little toaster in here. This is the Blackmagic ATM, and the reason that I call it the little toaster is that, man, that thing is hot, and it runs really, really warm, and I wonder, I'm concerned about putting it into a box for transport to shows.
You mean it actually runs that hot? Is that what you're saying?
It actually runs that hot, yes.
Well, that's why it's got that radiator on the back.
It's got that radiator, but even having the radiator mounted inside of one of the SKB cases, you better make sure you've got some airflow around that thing.
Well, I've got it stacked, and so far, no issues. It's it just runs warm, and if it doesn't run, if it fails, because it says it doesn't need any external cooling, so we'll see if it continues to operate as that. Now, did you get the ATEM television, or did you get the little thicker one? Did you get the one
No, I got the studio, the one rack unit, the one RU one.
Okay. So, I guess they just came out with an update on that too. So I've got to get mine.
That's right. Just on the 13th, they came up with the new firmware and a little slight modification to the software panel as well.
Oh, really? I hope that's, I'm going to have to go check out the updates before I update, see what they did or did not break.
I haven't found things that they've broken. I found some things that they fixed, but not things that appear to be broken. But the good thing that they have, and something I really, really think is good, is you can go and roll back to earlier drivers if you want. And they make it very easy for you to go back and in fact, some of the example files have changed. And if you were working with earlier examples and you maybe use those for a basis for some of your lower thirds or something, you might want to go back and on another machine, go ahead and download the earlier drivers and catch those templates and stuff, because the templates have changed in the new ones.
I'll have to do that. Hey, so, you know, last week after the show, I basically did like 3 switches, and 15 minutes later, we were on a call basically doing our first planning meeting, believe it or not, for CES 2013. And Andy, I know you were on the call, and we had some good participation from TPN members. I'm optimistic we're going to have a nice group this year.
I think so. I think it's always a challenge at this time of the year, because it's hard to make plans, but you really have to begin that planning cycle. One of the things I wish the CEA would do is, as they in years past, they had the press alumni where you could come, and if you had credentials the year before, you could just check the box. And I haven't been able to find that magic box here yet. Have you found that in the registration form?
Yeah, I haven't even got that far yet. So it's just one of those things where I've been so busy. I'm behind on a whole bunch of stuff because of what's been going on here in the last couple of weeks. But I did talk with the CEA rep, and so hopefully they're going to come back, and I'm hoping that we're moving up in the pecking order, as they say, to have a little different location this year. So we're kind of waiting on that to come through. So that's, that seems to happen sometime, usually September, October timeframe. So we're a ways out yet from getting our finding out what type of location we're going to be able to use. So we're just keep our fingers crossed at this time and continue to move forward. So my plan this weekend, believe it or not, is working on sponsor packages for that show. So it's a, it's just one of those things. It's if I don't get it done, then it'll be too late to start sending those out.
It's interesting to see how, as trade shows in general have evolved, a number of them seem to have gone out of business. Companies much less likely to send people off to trade shows. That CEA has certainly been almost exempt from that trend, I think.
Yeah. So have you guys, let's get into some topics here. Did any of you see this post by Dalton Caldwell on July 1st that basically said what Twitter could have been? Have any of you seen that? This got a lot of a play. If you didn't, and I assume probably you guys had you guys seen this at all?
No, I didn't actually see it. I mean, just the whole concept of what you just said is an interesting comment purely from the standpoint that I don't believe that Twitter has tapped into its potential. That's for sure.
Well, what he has said in his blog post, and I'm going to try to summarize here because it's not long, but it's to the point. He says, I remember when you could go to Twitter and see Global Firehouse on the front page, Global Firehose on the front page. The Global feed was mostly employees and their friends talking to each other. He says when Twitter started to get traction, he says the thing that really made Twitter powerful and what really made him say, oh my goodness, was their API and their real-time protocol. And, he goes into the next sentence talking about when Twitter started to get traction, there was two groups or two camps within Twitter. One was the camp that wanted to build their entire business around real-time API, and the second was that the company wanted to have the Google advertising model. So we know which model won because they've spent the last two or three years, closing the API, making it more restrictive, putting in lots of restrictions on rules and so forth, and they have definitely went the advertising route, and I guess that's bringing them a plenty of revenue. So, that got a lot of discussion, and it reminds me, I don't know if I told you guys or not, but when I was in Austin a couple weeks ago, I had dinner with Adam Curry and his now lovely wife, Mickey, and Adam showed me an app that they were working on. Adam and Dave have always been big on this river of information, river of news and information, in this constant flow of content across the, basically across the screen. And he showed me an app that he was working on, and that I was just about like, Adam, I'll go buy an Android phone now if you'll let me have access to this thing. it was pretty cool. And basically what he is, and it's similar to a certain extent Google Reader, but not even close in another instance, is that he is able to basically pull everything, Twitter, Facebook, all these different feeds of information into a single source. And he stripped the HTML out, and it was just the raw data was there. And then
it's like a scrolling feed. It's like an RSS feed almost.
And it's, but what he had in the bottom of it was hooks. You know, he could tweet something. He could bookmark it. He could, you know, he could send it to another profile. And what was, and it was all open. These guys are doing all open source stuff. And they, and you basically, you could watch someone else's stream as well. It wasn't like it was restricted to, you know, to just me, him being able to see his own stream. Well, anyway, I just found it very compelling with what he was doing. And so it goes into a comment that this guy, this Dalton Caldwell, made last night, where he announced in a proposal where he's basically suggesting that it's time to put together an open, truly open API that's similar to what Twitter has created, and make it a paid resource. In other words, if you want to use it, you would have to pay to use it to, you know, basically sustain the infrastructure. So he's got a company called app.net, and basically he is putting out a challenge. He wants to raise $500,000 in the next 30 days in order to basically make this project, being a consumer facing iOS app and service that developers could at will tap into, and, you know, basically making an open source, to a certain aspect, Twitter, but making it much more rich in content. You know, just imagine, you know, and this goes hand in hand with I was like, man, this guy's, you know, doing what Adam's doing in this, and he's been on private development. Dave didn't put any development to Adam's application, but Adam's going to make it open source here soon. So I took this email, I took this link, and I fired it over to Adam. I said, hey, you need to talk to this guy. I really think at some point, as users, you know, I find myself not going to Twitter as much. But, you know, we have to, I think, as users, find a way to take back. You know, look what's on Facebook. You know, I got some stuff about Facebook, but look what's on Facebook. We're being inundated with the crap that we are. You know, is it time for users to take back the internet?
Yeah, I think that I'm supportive of this. I think the problem is that most of the traffic is going through Facebook and Twitter, and are you going to be able to get access to those APIs to be able to pull it into this timeline? Or is this timeline that's being proposed the source, and all you're doing is pumping that stuff into both Facebook and Twitter? So it's the core source of the content, right? And then also the source, or the primary source, on the display side as well, and that pathway publishes into Twitter and Facebook, you know, as an option, right? So you have kind of, you're in the center of the control of what you're publishing, and that timeline is the master timeline, right? Not the timeline on Facebook or the timeline on Twitter,
right? And that's, basically, I'm sorry to step on you, Rob. His ideas is this would be a new stream. This would not, you know, this probably would not tap into the Twitter stream, because, you know, Twitter has made it so restrictive.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you can no longer count on them playing nice, you know, and they keep dropping bombshells on these developers. You know, you think about these guys. And you think about the amount of work that they did and money that they spent, and to have Twitter just basically cut their legs off, you know, that's got to be just beyond discouraging. So I understand these, you know, this guy's a developer first. He's, you know, and he has got some pedigree to pull this off from a coding standpoint. You know, so this guy is not no slouch when it comes to, and he's had a couple of startups, I think failed startups, but ones that if I said their name, you would be familiar with. But, you know, so I think it's an interesting, you know, Andy, would you, you know, would you t- take the internet back? And just think of what would have happened if Twitter would have really embraced open API and you.
Oh, absolutely. And I think when you put this in the context of the as Apple moves into Mountain Lion with ever increased reliance on the App Store, that there's always been a concern that someone that has a novel idea or for whatever reason decides not to go through the official channels doesn't have a way of getting to market. And so it looks to me that in issues like this that preserve that ability to go directly to the end user is absolutely crucial. And it's something that will become more and more unusual unless people actually take action to make it happen.
And the way I look at this thing is that, you know, Facebook has done so much crazy stuff. And Twitter, and now, here's the headline on GigaOm. Twitter's building a media business using other people's content. They're building curation services. And, yet the utility of that data, you think about what they're doing here and think about, all these services have to make money. But why? Why can't I pay $10 a month for a service that, lets me participate a little closer?
Well, Todd, it's also another part of this is each of us wants to own our own content, right? I think that the web and the internet was built on, really, if you go back in time, you had a website or you had a blog or whatever, and the content that you created, you published to your own platform, right? Your own kind of public online presence. But what's happened over the last 5 or 10 years or so is this shift over to people publishing their content on proprietary closed platforms. And I think that that's what we're seeing really starting to take over now. Well, it's basically totally taken over. And it's really threatened the very fabric of what the web and the internet was built on originally. And I think what they're really tapping into here, and I think it's the direction that we all need to really start thinking about, is should we, as people that are participating in a very public, open web and internet, we should probably own our content, what we publish up there. That's why I keep pulling back to this concept of, I should really be pumping all my content that I produce through my own site on the web, just because I'm in control of that content, right? And that content can be put out in ways that I understand, or what's going on with Facebook and even Twitter. They're basically monetizing my content, and there's no money coming back to me, and really, I don't have any control over what happens to that content down the line, right? Who can see it? If I put stuff up that's for a closed group of people or something like that, or a small group of people, Facebook could turn it on and make it public at any time, and I just don't have control over that content. So I think that's what this is really all about, is the user having more control over their content, and also being able to create an experience that they can control and filter. I think that a lot of the pundits have been talking about for a long time that we're getting kind of inundated with too much content now, and it's the tools that we use are not filtering it against what we are wanting to get, right? There's a lot of noise out there that needs to be filtered through smart agents or things like that. So there's an opportunity, I think, to do it better. Now, granted, there's nothing we can do about the whole aspect that Facebook has almost a billion users, and that's going to be a huge obstacle to doing something new like this as well.
Well, I also think too, we have to give credit where credit is due. The social aspects that Google+, Twitter, and Facebook have all brought to the space is unparalleled compared to where we've been before. Would I wish that conversation was happening at geeknewscentral.com? Well, you're doggone right I would. But at the same time, I'm a realist in knowing that it doesn't have to happen on my website. But at the same time, it would be nice to be able to control the flow, you know, I've thought about this a lot. And, if I look at my website as it is today, in order to achieve what I've been thinking about, I have to make some changes, and it's one of those deals where, I've got, this great content line down the left-hand side of the page. And then I have a full, full at least a quarter of the page, dedicated to paying the bills. But I've also got this other discussion area here where I could have a social stream being played that, while it could be on my website, it also could be on apps and everything else. And I've been resistant in putting, I know there's Twitter widgets and Facebook widgets and Google Plus widgets, but I want one widget where everything flows through there and not have to have three doggone, just look what I have loaded here. I've got in the top of my thing here, I've got, what did I do when we get ready to launch the show? I went on Google Plus, I went on Facebook, I went on Twitter, and I announced we're doing the show live. It's insanity that I'd have to, post that three times, but you're dealing with three ecosystems that are locked down. There's utility in central locations, but there's also utility in openness and being able to have the entire stream. You can have that entire stream multiple places. I can be over on someone else's website, and as long as the design is good, I could actually be talking on TechCrunch or another site like that with people that I'm associated with that are also on TechCrunch. It doesn't have to be a bunch of the other TechCrunch bozos that are always making weird comments. I can, I could have that API call so that when I hit that site, it would be like, we'd have in the window? We'd have Rob, we'd have Spitballs, we'd have David, the guys that are in chat, and we'd all be on that site and we could all be working. So huge, but is it possible to do it in this day and age with these three big gorillas in the room? I think he's got a fantastic idea. And it really set my brain to working, and I sent an email to about a dozen people last night saying, read this, and read this in order. Don't read them out of order because you're not going to get the context if you don't. So those of you that are listening tonight, I don't normally put show notes in the TPN blog post, or in this show's blog post, but I'm going to put these three links in there, and you guys just read them in successive order. And if you're not following completely what we've been talking about so far, I think you'll have this a moment of like, ta-da! So, Andy,
I think I need to read the three things in order. I'm not sure that I got a little bit of the concept of River of Muse that you were talking about earlier. Dave Weiner's been talking about that for years.
But it goes beyond the river, though, Andy. What we're talking about here is a central location where stuff that you do every other place. It's basically like how can I describe it? Your Twitter, your Facebook, and your Google Plus discussions
all funnel into one experience.
Right, yeah, right. Exactly. And I was trying to think. Wasn't the notion behind Friend Feed?
But most of those services, including Twitter, have got these very restrictive APIs.
I recognize that, and this would be an open source version of that, as opposed to closed APIs that each of the services would be advocating. But I think that this notion has been around for more than a couple of years.
Well, I think you're right. It has, and it's been a discussion point by developers for a while because, when Twitter was started, how did they build their popularity? They had this great open API. Mm-hmm.
And guys, this concept has been built into Windows Phone for about 18 months now. It's called the People Hub.
Uh-huh.
And it basically does like what you guys are saying. It actually creates one stream of conversation from all of the big social media sites, all into one experience, into one area of the phone. So I click on one tile on the phone and it loads a screen that has all of the discussion from Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, all in one, stream. And so I can see what the conversations are of all my friends from all of those social networks, all in one view. Now, granted, that's not an open platform. That's just on Windows Phone. But that concept is I think, and where this is really going towards, right? It's just trying to keep us from having to go to four different clients to try to get access to our friends' discussions, right? And what's happening up there. But I think now, the corollary to that is the filtering, right, and context and those kind of things, which is kind of a secondary piece of this, which I have to say, with Dave and what he's proposing here with this river of news, it's not a very kind of say user friendly kind of kind of experience. But he just builds stuff that's kind of simple based on code, right? Yeah. And he's just very simple in how he builds this stuff, and it's not very pretty, right? Yeah. But it works, right? It's that kind of concept. So if this guy can kind of make it look more kind of user friendly and that's good.
I think what he wants, Rob, is that the pretty can be in the apps people build to it.
Yeah.
So that's that's the thing is, if I need a specific utility, and for me the utility would be like, the fans of the show, you see something cool, press this button and it comes back to me as a show submission, there's different kinds of things that you can, there's different utilities based upon people's needs. And, for me, I'm about collection and curation and finding stuff that I can talk about during this show, during Geek News Central and everything else. And, from that aspect, and it might be something as simple as something that's residing on my phone that if I see something, it has to be, each need would be different, but the source data is all there in this open API river of data. And again, the only way you're going to get that is to get mass. Now, is Twitter going to let a project like this pull?
Yeah, I think that's the big question, right? I mean, they seem to be pulling back from making their APIs available to places like this. I mean, really, honestly, this would be a threat to their business model. Yep. The same with Facebook.
Yep. So again, it may have to be something that if he's successful, it would be the, a fourth or fifth wheel. It might be the new Twitter. And, maybe it takes a couple of years. I don't know. I guess we'll see where it leads. But it's got my attention from a content creator standpoint, thinking of the ongoing utility of it. Let me switch gears here and let's talk about a topic. And let's talk about if I had should have made a graphic where I could put up on the screen right now that said fail in big capital letters, F-A-I-L. It's the same four letters of a company called Dig, that total fail. This has to be, the sale of Dig has to be the biggest loss of an opportunity in Silicon Valley in a lifetime. Here you got the darling site of the internet, top 10 site that was offered $200 million just a few short years ago.
They should have taken it.
$200 million. They were offered $500 million. Well, I guess it's a little more than that. The people they paid about $12 or $13 million for the code, $500,000. I thought $500,000 for the Dig code. That was a hell of a bargain. That's fire sale, guys. That is just I'm just sitting here. This is incredible. Kevin Rose says, oh, I want to thank our investors. $45 million invested in Dig.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what happened there. I think that there was a major brain drain that happened at that company at certain stages of critical stages. They never got back on their feet again.
I wonder how much Kevin cashed out. He says he didn't make much money, but for him, that, what does that equal to? He's doing well. And I think the Wall Street Journal says Kevin Rose, Dig failed because social media grew up. But, I think it failed because they were too stupid to take the offer before.
Yeah.
I think even before before there was third party money into it, it was valued at about $40 million. And that would have been a good opportunity to take the money and run. Before there was anybody else, it was just the original founders in there.
Hindsight's 20/20, but they made two or three major missteps within a year and a half or so, site design changes and stuff like that. They had a good model, Andy, where did you go for a lot of your SDR news content?
Well, Dig and Reddit to three very similar aggregators. And it was interesting to see how much there was variation from one to the other, based kind of on the reader base that they have. The people in that community gave a little bit different perspective on a given story, and that's why combining the three of them, I think gave a better view of what was going on.
Right. I I talked about this on my last show on Thursday night, but I just think it's incredible, So I wonder if anyone's going to be willing to give Kevin Rose $45 million again.
Well, he's at Google Ventures now, right?
Right, right. So I guess he's spending their money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was thinking he probably made more money on the Revision 3 buyout than he probably did on Dig, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know how they had their structure over there, but potentially he did. Hey, let's talk about, I follow a bunch of media sites, and I follow some sites that follow stuff going on in the industry as far as the news industry goes. I'm just kind of watching. I've taken a habit of just kind of watching what's going on there, because these guys are trying to shift. They know their model is in trouble, and I'm just kind of, so I've subscribed to a bunch of stuff that is trying to watch what's being announced at New York Times and sites like that. I'm just trying to get some more insight into those sites. And there was an article on Jim Romensko. Boy, this is romensko.com, mouthful. And so essentially there's an article that came out that says the Dow Jones Union, no more free labor. And it goes in to say the union represent Dow Jones employees say management is laying off staffers, 62 so far this year, and telling those who remain on a job that we simply have to do more with less. And that's what at least Dow Jones is telling them. The union president has sent an email out that says no more free labor. And he says the company is counting, as always, on your willingness to work for free, stay late or work weekends, and never charge the company. He says these days of free labor have to end. Not everyone is eligible for overtime. Most reporters aren't eligible for overtime, but all are eligible for at least comp time, and everyone is eligible for holiday pay and a premium for working on scheduled day off. He says from now on, you have to file every dime the contract says you can. Basically, they're putting the gauntlet down and saying, all right, you're going to cut all these people, and you're going to make us work longer hours. We're going to hold your butts to the contract, and we're going to make sure that guys get comp time and get everything that they're allowed within their contract without this, this employer saying, hey, can you stay for a couple of hours? And, this wink, wink, But I think this is a trend going on a lot more. People ask, can it be do a lot more for a lot less? And most people are rolling over like slaves and doing it because they're afraid that if they don't, if they're not a team player, they're going to, you know, they'll be out of a job. But are employers starting to ask too much of employees? And is it because a sign of desperation in the bottom line margins getting smaller that these companies are doing this? Or is this just a trend all the way across America?
I think there was another piece that that was saying that in effect, people are working an extra day per week because of their first thing you wake up, you check your email, and then you're there in the evening, and it's like, okay, I'll take one more look here before I go to bed, and then you see there's something else that needs attention. And 45 minutes later, you know, you've written this email, gotten, you know, two other things that over the course of a week, it's like another extra day of labor that people are putting in vis-a-vis the 40-hour work week, if that ever did exist.
I think for self-employed people like me, 40 hours a week is
exactly. I
haven't had one.
See how it feels.
You know, I worked less hours than when I was in the Navy.
Yeah.
You know, in all honesty. You know, when you're working for a regular job, you know, I don't know what the policies are at Microsoft, Rob, but if you guys get, do they give you comp time if you put in overtime, or is it just expected you're going to work 10 hours a day and that's just the way it is?
Well, yeah, I would say that at least, you know, from a Microsoft perspective, they're very conscious of kind of work-life balance. And it's good in that way from the standpoint that that there is kind of a general kind of downtime concept there that everybody in the company respects, is that during off work hours, there isn't a lot of emails flying around. Now, I have to say that back in the early days of Zune, that was not the case. But I would say in the Xbox world, that is definitely what's different, is that back in the early days of Zune, people were working around the clock. I mean, it was quite a different. It was much more of a startup kind of environment back in the like 2007 and 2008, where people were really, really engaged all the time. And I think that was kind of indicative of that time and the attitude and the excitement around Zune. People were kind of really plugged in and doing as much as they can. And that's not to say that there's not a lot of hard work going in, you know, on the Xbox team, but it's just we've kind of moved to this point where there's people that cover, you know, a wide range of jobs there that they have their jobs under control and they have their areas, you know, totally under control. And it isn't really necessary to work, you know, 100 hours a week, you know, to do that. Right. So it's kind of a big company attitude versus a kind of a startup type of attitude. And I think both have good and bad sides. I tend to kind of gravitate more towards the startup kind of mentality, and I'm always on my phone. I don't, you know, like I will see, you know, that a lot of people in the company will have like a, you know, like a autoresponder, you know, out of office kind of mail thing that they trigger. So if, you know, if you send an email out to, you know, somebody in the company, you know, you'll get a bounce back that says, you know, I'm out of the office until this date and that kind of stuff. I never set up that kind of thing. So when I'm out of the office, really, I can be reached and I will respond. But that's not really common at Microsoft that people are willing to do that. So anyway, that's kind of a snapshot of kind of how I look at it, and it's quite a contrast to the kind of startup world.
You know, one thing that I have found here as of late is, you know, people pretty much know I live here in Hawaii, and they pretty much know that most people know that I am 3 hours behind. So, you know, here it's almost 7 a.m. local, will be 1 o'clock on the East Coast. So my normal day routine recently has been getting up at 5, And usually what I've tried to do now is not immediately bed to computer. I've tried to, you know, give myself 10 or 15 minutes to kind of walk around, stretch, you know, instead of just coming and plop my ass here in front of the computer in 2 hours. So, but I'm usually by 5:15, you know, I'm not giving myself very much room. I'm giving myself a little bit. I'm, you know, 5:15, I'm in front of the machine and reading email. And, you know, generally, you know, my phone doesn't start ringing until 8 a.m. But I've noticed in the last couple of months, very often 5:30. And I'm looking at my phone and I'm like, yeah, I should probably answer that. And I'm answering the phone here in Hawaii at 5:30 in the morning and talking to a buyer or whatever it may be. I don't normally do any type of podcaster calls at that early in the morning. Generally, it's people that are have business relationships with us. So I'll take that call. And, you know, they're not surprised that I'm answering the phone. They know I'm in Hawaii. And, you know, I don't say nothing. I don't say it's early here. And I just, you know, I do business as it is. But one thing I've noticed that's really started to surprise me is 5 o'clock here. It's 8 Pacific, 11 Eastern. And my phone, I'm getting more calls now at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, my time, meaning people are working 8 p.m. West Coast.
Yeah.
Asking me for proposals. Sometimes that's still that same day. And I'm thinking to myself, how late are these people working? You know, and they're in a job that is in a business that is pretty traditional. And I'm just like, these folks are going to be dead by the time they're 55. I just find it completely. Now, Andy, you know, you're old school guy. You know, you worked for a company before that had business hours. How was it in the old days working with the Agilent and HP? Was it a 15-hour day, or was it did they have more traditional business hours?
I think a big part of it was as you began to work with geographies around the world in a follow the sun type of environment, that there were expectations that you would in fact you know, be available for those conference calls or participation or whatever. You had to go back actually older than that to the late 80s, where it was a little more traditional work environment. But I'm probably not a good person to ask, because I've almost always lived in Eastern or Central time zone and worked for companies in California. So, and if you happen to have customers in the East Coast people in the factory at the West Coast who are still there at 5 o'clock in the evening, you could inconvenience no one, but still work 12 hours a day yourself.
That's right. And you were stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, I used to get some relief here because I knew by about noon to 1 o'clock or even 2 o'clock in the afternoon here in Hawaii that most people were starting to, and my email volume would go down and I would get, basically my day would be over. But that has not, you know, like I said, they're calling me at 5 my time. And it's just, it's a little, it makes you think of where it'd be. We'll see what life expectancy ranges are as we get older with this.
Well, Todd, I think it's also what's going on here too is overall with the web and the internet, the business world has gone more global, right? And with business activities on a global base, I know here over the last couple of weeks, I've been actually working with people in Paris, France, on a project that I'm working on. And they're kind of like, 9 hours, you know, ahead of me. So I kind of have to adjust my schedule. And I think there's more and more people that are working in businesses that have kind of global reach and global relations. And they're working with, you know, getting products made in Asia, or they're, you know, they have partners that are, you know, in locations all around the world, and that requires people to work longer hours because you're dealing with different time zones. And I think that's what's also, you know, that's what you're saying too with your business, is that you're working with people in different time zones you know, around the world. And that forces people to work longer hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm going to really shift right on you guys here on this topic. And we're going to talk about Xbox. I never talk about Xbox because I don't talk about gaming. But in this particular instance, I want to read a headline to you. Ads up, games down. The ugly, profitable details about Xbox Live advertising. So I saw that headline. I'm like, this would be a good one. Let's read this and see what Rob has to say. And they've got this screenshot of Xbox, and it shows two things for games, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 little icons that were ads that come up when you're on a page. And so I'm looking through this, and I'm kind of not understanding 100% what this guy's talking about. And I told Ray, my son, I said, load the Xbox. I want to look at the default load screen and all this stuff. And he brought me in there, and I'm like, this thing's a big billboard. And I didn't realize, you know, a gaming thing, you think you're going to have a menu, but there's like, this thing is jam-packed full of advertising. And I said, how do you get to the games? And he showed me and wobbled me around a little bit. And so, you know, I kind of got a little better feel for the Xbox. So, you know, this kind of goes on top of another discussion. You know, he says, okay, 2 weeks ago, I need a new Xbox Live membership. And I'm like, he's scolded me a year ago for not buying the family version. So I said, we'll buy the family version this time. And do you think I can find an Xbox Live family version, you know, coupon deal that they don't make them no more? And I was like, okay, so now they want me to spend probably twice as much money. This Microsoft's pretty slick. At what point are they going to start putting Coors Light and Carl's Jr. and Red Robin and Frito-Lay and those types of ads in games and putting them on you know, the login, and you have to, hey, you got to watch this Coors Light commercial before you go play your golf game or something. This thing's turned into quite the money machine, hasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly has. I mean, I should probably disclose here a little bit that I actually work for the group that manages the advertising on the Xbox. So, yeah, and actually here recently I've added to my my job here at Xbox. I've actually taken on another aspect of it, and it does involve some advertising and subscriptions marketing. So.
Well, maybe I mean, better be careful. And well, let's before we put Rob on the spot too much and get him fired. Andy, you know, do you have an Xbox, or do the grandkids have one?
No, I don't, and I'm really probably not able to contribute very much here because the code coming back, we just no data.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm looking here in this article, and they're saying, Rob, according to this article, and I'm not going to put you on the spot this much, but according to the article, you guys are getting some pretty serious CPMs for those ads on the front of that dashboard. And of course, every time someone turns on the Xbox, the dashboard loads, and yep. You by default, ka-ching, the cash register rings. I'm looking just based upon what they have said in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So, you know, you guys are effectively, if this is true, if this article is true, you guys are, every time a machine gets turned on, you have the potential of earning as much as $125 per 1,000 loads, at least if that's what you're getting, what they say you're getting, which is an incredible CPM for a screen that loads when the box is turned on. So, you know, I'm now starting to understand a little more on why Microsoft has done what they have done with the Xbox, and why it's probably going to be almost impossible to ever see, unless, like we talked about earlier, select new media groups being on the device. Because this thing is a clicking cash register. I can just... And you know what's
and your point is,
and you know,
yeah, exactly.
And you know the funny thing, Andy, here is you have
what's
to
news about that, right?
You have to pay. You not only are you getting advertisements in your face, you have to pay to use the live portion of this thing. I mean, this is the biggest scam going in the whole doggone country.
Hey, Todd, you gotta back up and get some perspective here. cable television. Think about cable television and think about Xbox, and you'll see a very similar model.
I expect that from TV, but when I buy a device and
but
I buy,
wait, how
hold
much
on, hold
would
on,
you pay
when I buy a device and I buy a game. And I have paid for that game.
Before you answer, know that others have paid as much as
$29.95. Well,
but wait, there's more.
It is interesting how it's all about the eyeballs.
Well, Todd, here, let me make a comment kind of on a more serious note here. I'm on the team that does the programming for the console for Xbox. So what's actually put on the landing screens and all of the other kind of front facing kind of experiences, right? So the blend of what you see there is a blend of kind of, you know, some ad spots, some promos for subscriptions and those kind of things, you know, like the Zune music packs, you know, or the Xbox music, and then gold, taking people from silver to gold, and then also promos for, you know, specials on content, you know, TV shows, movies, and then also just regular features of kind of new TV shows or new movies. So you're exactly right. All of those areas are focused on trying to drive revenue, but also they're also there's a balance that the company tries to maintain between making sure that most of what's up there is links to content, right, that the user could have an interest in, right? So if it's a new movie or a new TV show or something like that, it's a way to kind of expose that user to what's new and what games are new, features are new on the platform too. So sure, they're all advertising for kind of a revenue generating product, but as far as the percentage of the real estate that's used for pure advertising, brand advertising, it's actually a small percentage. And so I just wanted to kind of couch the conversation.
Okay, so according to penny-arcade.com, many companies spend much more when they buy an ad for their product. $250,000 will get you a good run for about 3 weeks, his source said. He says if you do multiple games, like one for a trailer, one for a demo, that's where you start crossing the $500,000 mark. Keeping in mind this money simply puts your ad in rotation as Microsoft sells multiple games at a time. And if you aim your campaign at your target market, you'll be increasing the amount you spend on your advertising. So that's some serious ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-chingies. But, boy, what a business to be in. Andy, if we'd have thought about this before, who would have ever imagined, right?
But, Todd, you are in the advertising business.
I am. But, you know, it's a business that I have to fight for every scrap piece of spare advertising dollars a company has. You know, someday we will be first, but the television model is still so overwhelmingly dominant in getting advertising. It's just insane. Yeah. You know, I guess the thing is changing. You know, we see this battle going on right now, and it probably is a good segue into the next topic. You know, this battle with DirecTV and Viacom and Dish and AMC, and essentially what we are is, here you've got Viacom that needs more money and they want DirecTV to pay them, you know, and I got this screwed up on my last show, so I have to do a correction in my regular show, but DirecTV is saying we're not paying no more for this, and Viacom has increasing costs and they want more money for their programming, and you have to buy all 26 channels. What happens if DirecTV basically says forget it? And, you know, how long can those companies go with that lost revenue before they start breaking up the content into a la carte? I don't know. We will see where this goes. But AMC, you know, they still are on the sidelines. They have not they've not bent. Here in Hawaii, we have a channel called it's KITV4. I believe it's an NBC. I don't know which affiliate it is, but it's owned by Hearst, and they're in a battle right now with Time Warner. And so what's on that page now on their channel is some other programming. They've actually been removed. I think we're still going to get the Olympics here, but Hearst has got some channels that are going to be covering Olympics in some markets. So, you know, they're desperate to get back up on Time Warner before the Olympics starts.
The thing that I love about some of the battles that are going on is that there's a technical component with Barry Diller in the Aereo system.
That's on my list too.
Enables people to receive off the air and quote rent an antenna for $12 a month, and then you get all the off the air content.
And you get
And that's now illegal. I guess a judge back in New York said that it was cool for them to keep that going. So
round one. They basically, there's still the lawsuit, but the injunction to take it down has been upheld. They basically denied. They're not going to have to take the service down.
Yeah. So if that continues, then users have access to local content, and that's always been the hook that has kept the cable companies in play. So if that piece falls apart, then it's very likely that the whole thing will start to collapse, and all these media companies will start looking more and more towards going direct.
Well, the same token though, DirecTV, if I remember right, it cost $1 billion to put a satellite in the air, or how many ever, hundreds of millions. Yeah. So they are in a little different position. They have to have content to keep their subscribers. So they're walking a tightrope. Now, I think DirecTV has less bargaining power than a cable provider does. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the cable providers are one of the biggest troubles, and the salvation will be the DirecTVs and Dish people of the world for these networks for the time being. Because, you know, the DirecTVs of the world are not going to, you know, not having content on those transponders.
Yeah. But I think
over to see what's on those particular channels. We're DirecTV subscribers, and a little bit irritated that some of our programs aren't recording, but haven't gotten upset about it yet. But I could see over time, then you would begin to say, okay, is Dish an alternative, or is all this just way too much trouble, and we'll amuse ourselves in other ways?
Well, Dish already smacked down AMC. Mm-hmm. But Viacom has MTV, Nickelodeon, the Comedy Channel. I don't know what else they have. But I guess those are the three main ones, and then the rest of it is just junk. But, you know, this is just more opportunity for people to say maybe it's time to ditch cable. But the aerial model is going to be pretty impressive. It'll be interesting to see how that makes, you know, how that makes out. But, you know, they obviously, the court ruled for those folks. And it's just basically a relay service. That's all it really is.
Yeah. You know, each a user has their own antenna, right?
Right. Supposedly, quote unquote. I think there's some technical.
It's the same. It's pretty much the same thing as putting an antenna on your laptop and using Windows Media Center or something like that.
Right. All right, let's. We're getting wrap up here in 17 minutes, and I've got a bunch of stuff I still want to talk to you guys about. But social network scan for sexual predators with uneven results, and it was over on Reuters, and just so I can disclose that here, so we don't get in trouble with them. But basically, this goes beyond, I think, scanning for sexual predators. Now, I think what they're doing is good in their chat room. There's two ways to look at this. Number one, none of us can fathom or can, you know, basically we all have the same opinion of sexual predators. They, you know, they need to be locked up and the key thrown away. But what they're doing is that basically they're scanning chat rooms for keywords and they're looking at relationships. You know, you have an adult profile and you have a minor profile, and if they're chatting together, it flags something in Facebook system and it starts monitoring the chat. And I don't know if it does the male discussions and so forth, but apparently some guy was talking with a 13-year-old. And he planned to meet her, and Facebook was able to detect this conversation, turn it over to authorities, and they arrested the guy as he arrived at the school to pick up 13-year-old. So, you know, number one, we got someone off the street that needed to be off the street. But two, let's leave the sexual predator thing on the table as being disgusting and needs a solution. But how do you temper that with them maybe watching monitoring a discussion maybe my wife and I are having in chat, or, and not to say that we're having explicit chats, but let's just use that as an example. Mm-hmm. You know, are they, does that get flagged and then they start monitoring what my wife and I are saying to each other? What do you guys think about that aspect of it? And, you know, we'll leave the other part where it is, but what do you think about that?
Well, I think I'm just scanning the article here, trying to get the general sense of what's going on. Was it based purely on the registered profiles that the people were having a conversation with?
It was part of it, and they don't go into too many details, because I'm sure if they do, then these predators will change their tactics. But it just goes to show you that they are watching. And the article I saw was not this one. It was not the original piece. I saw this the other day. And I thought it was, they were monitoring everything. I just didn't know that they were looking for this adult minor, type of discussions. And they don't really spell it out exactly, but it says illegal activities. And that could be a whole plethora of different things, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So, it's like, in one hand, you want to make sure these guys are caught. And number two, you're like, how much are they really snooping on? And it goes back to the privacy thing. There's definitely no privacy on these networks.
Yeah, I think they're definitely snooping on all the stuff that we're doing on the internet. As much as they technically can. I mean, there's so much data traveling over the pipes now that I have a hard time thinking that they're getting down in the weeds too much. I think it's just scanning for keywords and things like that. It's pretty much all that they're doing. It's not like they're some guy in some office somewhere is
right
reading all of our conversations.
An adult conversation with my wife, I'm on travel and we're having a little chit chat back and forth, you know, did that flag the monitor? You know, but maybe they know the relationship. Maybe they know I'm husband and wife, and they say, oh, it's in his profile. It shows he's married to her, so that doesn't throw a flag.
Well, I think what throws flags is certain words, I think, is what it's based on. That's just my own guess. But and then you throw in the aspect of some context, you know, in combination of words.
Right.
And that's probably what they're focused on, because then that can be scanned very quickly by supercomputers or whatever.
Right.
Where having somebody actually read your communications, I don't think is really what's going on here.
Well, anyway, just as a reminder, what you put out there on the net is not necessarily private, and people are so used to this medium that, you know, nothing is guaranteed in this world anymore. No. All right, let's talk a little more about security, I guess, per se. Yahoo and their breach. Was that just like a total rookie mistake? And then, you know, networking 101, 400,000 year names in plain text?
All I can say is Yahoo's in trouble. course, they've been in trouble for a long time.
I went on this for a long time on my show the other night, but if you just take the time and look at the list of passwords, and usernames and passwords are out there, you can just easily get to them. Just look at the passwords people are using, and just read 100 of them, and I'll let you guys come up to your own opinion, but people are
not
pretty,
very secure.
People are pretty stupid. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Amazon wanting to have same-day delivery. Basically, you go on Amazon.com, you say, oh, I want this, and a few hours later, it's knock on your door, it's delivered or made available to be picked up at your local 7-Eleven. Would you do a lot more shopping at Amazon if you could do that?
I don't know. I'm not so sure. Maybe.
I know if I could, I would. You know, of course, I'm in a unique situation where everything has to be shipped in anyway. But Amazon, you know, is basically starting to charge sales tax in some states. And they say, well, if I'm going to have to pay the sales tax, fine. I might as well have a warehouse in that state and then some sort of expedited delivery.
Yeah, I think that there's always going to be a percentage of my purchases that I want to just go out and get, right? Not have to order and then wait a few hours or something like that. I think there's always going to be kind of this chunk of my purchases that will be like that. And I actually enjoy going out and walking into a store and kind of having that whole experience. I mean, that's just me anyway. I don't necessarily buy a lot of stuff online. I mean, I buy a certain amount of stuff, but I still like the idea of going out in a store and seeing a variety of stuff in the real world and being able to touch it and to buy it like that. That's just me, and maybe I'm old school, but I think that there's probably a lot of people like me out there.
Andy, how far do you live from a Best Buy?
About 12 miles.
Okay, so is that the only real major electronics store near you?
It is. Well, the we're very fortunate that we have an Apple store nearby here, or unfortunate, depending on your point of view. But we also happen to have an Amazon hub in Louisville. So most things we order from Amazon are usually 1 or 2 days to get here. So and again, it depends on the product. But I think from an age-related standpoint, there are many times that it would depend on the product. And I would say probably 2/3 of the time, if there's an option, as Rob talks about, we'd actually prefer going to the store, unless it was a kind of a routine purchase or something that would make more sense to purchase online.
Yeah, I find UPS is delivering here 3 days a week, largely. You know, it's a matter of our location too. Mm-hmm. There's just some stuff you just cannot get. Now, you know, and I typically end up not paying. It usually costs me more because I have to ship it in. You know, so I have to pay for. The only thing that comes to Hawaii is a UPS ground. You get that in about 10 days, and if I want it quick, it's FedEx second day or. Second day, and that's not necessarily an expensive freight for, especially if you're buying an item that's $4.95. You pay for more for shipping than you pay for the item. So I think a lot of it has a lot to do with geography too. But when I was in New York, I went to the B&H store, and it was fantastic to walk through the store and touch things. But I would imagine if I lived in New York City, I could see doing a lot of mail order. I don't, just because of the, well, maybe New Yorkers are so used to it, but it's just the mass of people and getting around and cab fares and everything else.
Sure.
It just, you add it up. It's worth it just to have UPS bring it to the house. So last story of the day, either of you loaded the new Amazing Alex app yet?
No. Tell me about Alex.
It's, I don't know anything about it except it's number one. It's of course done by Rovio. And it's a new non-Angry Birds game, and so everyone's saying that this is the number one dealio. Now it's number 11 on on Android, but they have they're rocking and rolling here with this new whatever it does. And my kids were asking me to load it last night, so it must be something cool.
So Todd, it sounds like you haven't loaded it yet.
No, that's why I was asking you guys if you've loaded it.
Well, they probably don't have a Windows Phone version of it yet. Is probably one thing. I mean, true. I do have an iPad, so I could probably load it on that if I wanted to. I haven't really, but I have heard about it. I think it could be their next billion-dollar game or something. Who knows, right?
Yeah, I'm looking at it. It's definitely for the kids. And let's see if I can put up a screenshot here. Of course, you guys can't see the stupid screenshot because the downstream monitors are dead.
I've got it here at PC Mag. There's a picture of
it looks same type of puzzle.
Kid, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, same type of puzzle thing. Same type of puzzle thing, knocking stuff over, and it looks like it could be a lot of fun, a lot of puzzles and stuff. So same type of motif, I guess, from Rovio, but definitely designed for younger kids, it looks like. So anyway, what else did you guys see anything this week in the space? Anything new?
I did. Did you guys see the topic that Mr. Scoble was talking about this week about a new chipset from Qualcomm?
Yeah,
that will actually cache all of the sensor data into one master database on your phone.
Huh.
No.
Yeah, I saw something about it.
Over to it now, Mobile 3.0.
So yeah. He thinks this is going to be a big deal, huh?
Yeah, I think it gets back to kind of the whole trend around the Google Glass and the augmented reality scenarios, where your mobile device aggregates all of its sensor data to kind of figure out where you are in the world, what you're doing. And it's all about context, right? It's all about trying to drive data to real-world contextual scenarios. And it certainly seems like that could be a real game changer in the long run. I think we're a few years out from really seeing this be a big part of our computing world. But if you think about the trends that we're seeing kind of overall of natural user interface, gestures, voice, you can really see how these things might coalesce into something that's compelling. It's as Robert says, it definitely goes way over the freaky line.
And the thing is that just in scanning this article here, I can like immediately get the concept. And I've been kind of teetering on the edge of whether to get an Android device, i.e. the Nexus tablet. And this is just like one more reason that I need to be in that ecosystem.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting move. Andy, how about you?
Well, I had just been attracted by this latest bright and shiny thing here. this looks very interesting. I was going to mention that Nexus tablet because I thought it was very significant that Walter Mossberg in Wall Street Journal gave such a high rating and review for that Android tablet. And really the very first significant challenger to the iPad and and really puts the Amazon Fire seriously in third place, if not lower.
So what did the Nexus 7 had some legal issues, of course, and of course Apple's fighting it, but at what price point did that thing come in at? I think I knew it at one time, but...
That was at the $200 price point.
$200.
Yeah.
That is cheap.
For the 16 gig Wi-Fi
version. Edition.
That is so cheap for Google to come out, you know, with a tablet like that. It's incredible. I mean, they're like making zero money on that thing, though. Too.
I said that they were making, I think, less than $10 on it. The memory upgrades were, when you bump that up, their margins went up. But Mossberg also mentioned that the battery life is actually better than on the iPad. So I think it's going to be very interesting to watch that.
Well, guys, it sounds like our bandwidth is dropping off because the audio is getting worse. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to wrap this thing up here. We're just about at the hour 30 mark as it is now. But you guys, well, thanks for hanging out today. The audience, thanks for being on the stream. And it looks like the stream hung with us the entire time, even though the back video feed did not. So I apologize about that. But Andy and Rob, thanks for hanging out and spending some time with me today and talking talking a little tech. Of course, Andy, what's going on with SDR News? What are you, what's on tap?
I have was so impressed with the design that I saw recently for a mobile high definition studio, and I liked it so much I decided to go out and build one too. So that's what I'm working on.
So are we expecting to be using the mobile device for local gigs and that kind of thing?
I think yes, that's certainly in the plans, and that may also factor into the CES. We're not sure how, but that might be a good resource, and with a lot less freight charges than what we've had in years past.
Yeah, and it's definitely one an interesting, and I've gotten huge amount of traffic to that. To that article. That article has probably over 100,000 page views at this point. And I definitely caught a lot of people's attention. And I actually built two already for some people. I actually constructed two in my same exact design. And so I've made a little money on the side to build. I didn't want to become an integrator, but
you are.
Yeah, so I did two, and I basically put enough margin in it that it made it worthwhile. But I think that you just think where we've come with these types of devices, and I don't know what you've got into yours, Andy, but I think I have about $3,000 into mine. It's about the total I have for a good four channel switcher. And minus cameras.
I have not put in the digital audio portion of it yet, the digital audio mixer. I'm still analog on that side into the Behringer AES/EBU box.
Right.
But we'll see. I think one of the things that I'm concerned about in that mobile application is a lot of work riding the audio, keep your audio levels right and so forth, that I'm still old school enough that I like to have knobs to twist as opposed to trying to click and slide, click and drag on a computer interface.
Yeah, that is definitely one of those things that is going to be hard to overcome. And well, there's some ways to do it, but I understand that though as well. It's just it is a little bit tricky. So
it's interesting in the app notes that some people have actually used those with the HP touch screen on the video side of things.
Oh, really? Right,
using the touch screen as the interface
to actually do the switching from.
Yeah.
Oh, I hadn't seen that.
Yeah. So that would be an interesting situation. The only trouble is that those devices. Smallest one I can find, I think, is 21 inches, and then kind of defeats the purpose of being compact from a portable standpoint.
I'm trying to get them to do an iPad app.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah, because that's what's coming with the Roku. We'll be able to switch the Roku from the host seat. You just prop the iPad up, and you'll be able to switch if your switcher needs to go to the, if your guy that running the control panel needs to go to the bathroom, you can take over and switch, or if someone needs to go have lunch, you can switch for the hour that they're out.
Right. Yeah. The hour that they're there. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's just wrap this up so that, my electrician is finishing today. So I'm very happy. He's actually come in the studio. We're running LAN cables today. So my house is going to be completely modern. People say, why do you run land cables? Well, I've got a bunch of stuff under here that is going to a different location. So I'm really excited about this rack that I've got. So guys, thanks for hanging out. Thanks for coming today. Again, Anna McCaskey, SDR News, Rob Greenlee at robgreenlee.com. Of course, I'm Todd Cochran here at Geek News Central. Till next time, everyone, take care. Aloha. Bye.